Blog Talk Radio.
And now it's time to find out loud. It's the Tony Lane Show. Fabulous Tony Lane, along with Maris, as we welcome you to episode 352 of the Tony Lane Show. And of course, reminding you to log on to TonyLaneShow.com, blogtalkradio.com/Tony Lane Show, and of course, subscribe to the show in iTunes and on Google Play as we welcome you once again to another action packed edition. A lot of things have gone down. Obviously, we are a couple of weeks into fall now. The summer is finally over. And the No Mercy pay-per-view went down last week. Some surprises, some things weren't quite a surprise, because I guess we kind of knew where things are going, and we know where things are going, or at least what WWE is intending. So we will dive into that in just a few seconds as well. And then, of course, we have to discuss the untimely passing of two legends in pop culture, really, with the passing of the incomparable Bobby the Brain Heenan. Which happened a couple of weeks ago, and of course just recently the passing of the founder of Playboy, Hugh Hefner.
I still think that's crazy.
The Bobby Heenan thing, or?
Well, I mean both, but like, it's just like, Hugh Hefner you figured would just be around forever. He's Hugh Hefner, like.
He damn near was. I mean, he did live to be the ripe old age of 91, but and I guess he left his mark. I mean, Playboy.
Oh, he did.
Obviously, it's not as relevant, I guess, to today's generation as it was, you know, back in the day, because now the internet has kind of taken away a lot of that thunder that periodicals like Playboy once had. And I mean, what they show in Playboy was basically tame compared to the shit you can find on the internet.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it was like good housekeeping.
Yeah.
To the shit you see out there now. But it was, for a generation of people, Playboy magazine was like their first exposure to that kind of adult content. But it wasn't just that. I mean, there were some actually very good articles in there. I mean,
yeah, there actually was, like, people don't realize that. Yes, but people don't realize, like, there actually were good things to read in there. People are just like, oh, it's just boobs, and, you know, no, it's like there was some legitimate reading material in there. It wasn't just like a BS magazine.
No, absolutely not. It was a very good read a lot of times, and you know, and yeah, there was a centerfold or two in there as well, but still, it was always tastefully done, and it was never exploitive to the models, and, you know, I thought it was always done very well. You know, not that I mind the exploitive magazines either. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, like, waving the moral flag here. But I think that Playboy was always a very classy magazine.
It had its certain standards. It had high standards.
It did. You know, when you compare it to some of the more smut magazines, it really was kind of the upper tier. And you always had, you know, the more attractive women in Playboy overall.
Yes.
And so certainly a groundbreaking magazine in every way. And the Playboy Mansion, legendary for the debauchery and stuff that took place there. And it was sold, like, a couple of years ago. But under the condition that Hugh would be able to still occupy it until his passing. So I guess the new owner, he agreed to those terms. And
yeah, I noticed there was a headline that came up on one of my apps that was like, you know, mentioned figuring out who was going to live at the mansion now.
And I think in all actuality, Hugh was more of a figurehead for the last decade or more, probably. I don't know specifically. His daughter's actually been running the company for many, many years. So,
yeah.
But still, he is the founder, and, he, you know, whenever you see that iconic bunny symbol, you know, it's like synonymous with Playboy, and it's one of those most recognized brands, I would say, in pop culture. It really is.
Oh, it is. Without a doubt. You know that symbol.
Right. And you see girls in the bunny costumes and stuff. I mean, we got Halloween coming up. I'm sure you're going to see some bunny costumes.
Oh, you're going to see a ton of them.
You know. I mean, you see people all the time with Playboy tattoos. I know some girls who got Playboy tattoos.
You actually do see a lot of people with them.
They were never in Playboy, but they have the tattoos.
Yeah.
I guess wishful thinking. They wanted to be a Playboy.
True.
But, never quite made it. So Hugh Hefner dead at 91. Obviously, condolences and stuff to his family. And Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Another bad, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't want to hear that either.
Only 72, so much younger than you was.
Absolutely.
Bobby Heenan, of course, had been dealing with throat cancer for several years and even underwent major reconstructive surgery, you know, on his throat area there, which left him pretty much unrecognizable. I mean, other than, like, the eyes, you could still see that was Bobby Heenan in the eyes there.
It was. Well, I mean, he didn't have a jaw. He lost his jaw to cancer, too.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's so weird having worked in the medical field and having seen people without their jaws who have lost their jaws to cancer. It is just a weird-looking thing. It is so sad. I mean, I do not wish that on anyone at all. It's terrible.
And one of the most real tragic things of it all is, you know, Bobby Heenan, who is probably best known for being one of the best talkers in the professional wrestling business. You know, and unfortunately, the last decade or so of his life, he wasn't able to talk.
Yeah.
Because of the surgery. That was really the
cruel.
Tragic irony of it all. But certainly an individual that will go down. I mean, he is a WWE Hall of Famer, and rightfully so. A lot of people recognize him as, you know, without a doubt, one of, if not the greatest manager in the history of professional wrestling, and certainly the best color commentator, I would say, of all time. You know, I think that, you know, there have been some good color commentators, but none of them have ever been quite what Bobby Heenan was.
And no, I don't think so.
the team of him and Gorilla Monsoon was fantastic.
Mm.
Gorilla was the perfect straight man to Bobby Heenan's outrageous comments, and they were just fantastic. And you can just imagine that if there are some wrestling going on in the Pearly Gates, that would be the commentary team.
Oh, that is the commentary team now.
Reuniting Monsoon and Heenan, and I'm sure they get a lot of chuckles, as we did, you know, watching them on Primetime Wrestling. They were just fantastic together.
They were. That's probably one of my favorite set of commentators.
I would say, yeah. They're right up there. I think
the chemistry was perfect. Like, it really was that absolute perfect chemistry, and you couldn't get it with anybody else except those two.
It really was. It was just a perfect thing. You know, Monsoon had a habit of using those very big words a lot of times.
Yeah.
It helped me improve my vocabulary. I mean, I actually learned a lot of words from listening to Monsoon.
He was amazing. I loved him.
And Bobby Heenan, with his quick wit and the jokes, I mean, he was just so fast with everything. He was just fantastic. And you really don't have anybody that's that good. I mean, I think Corey Graves is great. Corey Graves is probably the best color commentator to come around in the last 20 years, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But he still is no Bobby Heenan.
No.
You know, obviously the best play-by-play guy of all time is Jim Ross. Especially to our generation.
Absolutely.
But as far as color commentators go, I think Bobby Heenan, hands down, was just fantastic. I mean, and a lot of people don't know, he was a wrestler, too.
He did spend a lot of time on commentary. So I imagine a lot of people wouldn't realize that he had been a wrestler.
Right. And a manager and all that. And it was instant heat back in the day. Like, when I first started watching WWE back in the 80s, if you put somebody in the Heenan family, it was instant heat. They were a heel automatically.
Oh, like, yeah.
It was perfect to help people build up and face Hogan and do whatever. And he had his big war against Hogan. It would represent, you know, whether it be Paul Orndorff or Haku or Harley Race. And then eventually even Andre the Giant. And you know, Andre the Giant for many, many years was a beloved babyface. And when he turned heel, putting him with Bobby Heenan really helped him get that legitimate heel heat that he needed to face Hulk Hogan, you know, in their epic encounter at WrestleMania 3. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize how significant a manager was, you know, like back in the day. And really, I think they should use them more now.
Oh, they should. Some of these guys just are not good on the mic. It's not their fault. Not everybody has that skill. And when you've got people like Paul Heyman, who's amazing on the mic, it's like you need more people like that. It would generate a lot more, like, interest in the characters. Like, it would be a whole nother level of entertainment.
And just think of all of the managers that were around back then when we first started watching, from Bobby Heenan to Classy Freddie Blassie,
mm-hmm.
to Jimmy Hart, to Mr. Fuji, to Jim Cornette.
I think a million, but didn't Ted DiBiase, didn't he manage for a bit?
He did later on. He was actually wrestling at that time.
True, yeah.
But, I mean, just the number of DiBiase was actually Austin's manager when he first came.
Yes, for Stunning Steve.
So, it certainly was a big loss, but certainly another one who left an indelible mark on the world of professional wrestling, and you know, you can go back, look at a lot of the stuff on the network or on YouTube or whatever, and it still holds up. I mean, the Bobby Heenan stuff, he was just hysterical.
Oh, he is.
And
he really is.
Hear how quick-witted he was. And so they got a good collection of some of his best moments on the network now. It's certainly something that I would look into. Even if, you know, you have followed him like we did back in the day, but, you know, it's been a while since we've gotten into some of the Bobby Heenan stuff. And certainly for the new fans who were never exposed to him, you know, it's certainly something that I would do if you have the network. Definitely check out that Bobby Heenan collection.
Even if you don't have the network, there are tons of great collections of clips of his on YouTube as well. Especially now that he's passed. I mean, like, there's all sorts of fan videos showing, you know, some of his best stuff. So it's like you can just easily go on there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of content out there to really get a good idea of just how brilliant he was. It was just fantastic. So quick-witted, too. You know, I remember his last time commentating the show for WWE, of course, was the WrestleMania, that gimmick battle royal. And he made the comment how, you know, by the time the Iron Sheik got to the ring, it was going to be WrestleMania 27.
Yeah. And
it was just so funny.
Oh, man.
You know, and he would just say whatever was on his mind, and it was just really great. And some people have tried to be funny like that and just never quite.
It doesn't work out.
You know. I mean, like Lawler, he tried to be really funny. He was funny sometimes when he's talking about boobs, I guess.
Yeah.
Puppies.
But he just gets annoying after a while, though. It's like,
I did like the team of him and JR. I thought they were
no,
good.
I did too, but like still, he would grate on your nerves after a little while.
Right.
Whereas JR never once did JR ever grate on my nerves. Like JR was really like the perfect commentator.
Right. Right. As far as your main play-by-play guy, JR was the best main play-by-play. But as far as color commentators, I would definitely say Bobby Heenan was fantastic. So certainly our condolences to Bobby Heenan, his wife, his family, and his friends. I know Paul Orndorff, an individual who he married, or not married, but managed, you know, he took it very hard. I heard an interview he did. He really credited Bobby Heenan for a lot, for helping him get
Yes, he did.
And, you know, He basically gave Heenan credit for everything. He was just like, you know, he wouldn't be Mr. Wonderful if it wasn't for Bobby Heenan.
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, it's life, though. It sucks.
And, you know, contrary to the character that he played, which was always a heel for the most part, most people said he was one of the most nicest and genuine people that you would ever
meet. I always heard that. Always heard that.
Yeah, and you don't hear many people talk ill of Bobby Heenan.
No.
Which is kind of odd that he always played the bad guy, and then somebody like Hogan, who always played the good guy, people don't have nice things to say usually.
That's usually how it works out.
Right. Isn't that the crazy?
That's the irony of how that works out all the time.
Passing of two iconic individuals, Bobby Heenan and Hugh Hefner. Speaking of WWE commentators, we know there have been some moves over the past couple of weeks, which has been a little weird, to say the least. One thing we said when they reinitiated this brand split was you got to do a hard split and not have them be anything alike, but now they're sharing a commentator, and you know, I guess they have no choice in this situation. But as you heard, JBL left the SmackDown booth to pursue some other interests, as they say.
Yeah, peace the fuck out.
We know there was some pressure on them to let him go after the bullying allegations against Mauro Ranallo, which ultimately led to him leaving the SmackDown booth. You know, he has since made up with them to a certain degree because he did come back and he is the main commentator for NXT, but I guess he's just cool with trips and only for NXT because he won't do SmackDown or Raw or anything.
Well, I think isn't he working with Bellator?
Yeah, he still does that, but he always still was able to do the Bellator stuff for Showtime, the boxing and stuff for Showtime.
Yeah, that's
but,
true.
You know, when he originally left SmackDown, we thought he was gone for good, and apparently Trips sweet-talked him into doing NXT. So he's been doing NXT for the past couple of months, and actually very good as the lead commentator for NXT.
Well, I mean, he is a good commentator, though. That's the thing.
Right.
Like, he's another great commentator to have, like, for working for your brand.
And I think that's a better fit for him because NXT is more of a wrestling show and not
yes.
so much sports entertainment. And, you know, Triple H is really the guy in charge there, and he doesn't mind somebody who actually calls the moves. It's actually encouraged as opposed to what you get on the main roster.
Yeah, because it's a completely different product if you think about it.
Right.
Like, that is geared towards, like, the educated wrestler. Like a real wrestling fan.
Right, where Raw and SmackDown are more on the sports entertainment side.
Yeah, they're more the bravado, flashy colors, storylines, all that stuff.
And so Todd Phillips and Byron Saxton are now joined by Corey Graves, which, as I said, Corey Graves is probably the best color commentator to come around in the last decade and a half, 20 years or so. Give or take. Really good. A lot of people love Corey Graves. He's fantastic. But he was already the color commentator on Raw. So now he's the color commentator on Raw and SmackDown. And it's like, okay, I thought these were supposed to be two separate brands, but you got the same guy commentating. I mean, he's not the lead commentator. You know, Michael Cole and Todd Phillips are still the lead commentators. But, I mean, having the same guy commentating both of the shows, and it's supposed to be this hard split, doesn't really scream a hard split to me.
No, not at all.
You know, I mean, I might just be nitpicking or something, but yeah.
Well, no, they're supposed to be separate. They told us everything's going to be separate. They're separate identities. Well, using the same commentator is not separate at all.
Right. Right. I mean, see, I thought it was just me.
No, it's not like it's just that's not how it works. Okay,
it takes away from it. It really does.
It's just they're gonna do what they want to do, but that's not a split. That's just not doesn't work like that.
Now, commentators aside, we had the No Mercy pay-per-view take place last week, and coming up next week we've got the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, which is headlined by Shane O'Mac versus Kevin Owens in the Cell. A second Cell match has been named, which is the tag team championship match with the New Day defending against the Usos in the cage, the Cell, whatever the hell it is. So, that should be interesting. But you know the Hell in a Cell, the tag team match, is going to probably open the card. Which, once again, you're putting a tag team match right at the fucking bottom of the card, which is terrible.
It is. That's a shitty deal.
But, you know, that's what WWE does on the main roster. I mean,
that's true. They're always doing that stuff.
I've heard people say, I know Bully Ray, Bubba Ray, whatever the hell you want to call him, has even said that if you're in a permanent tag team and you get over in WWE, you basically get over in spite of them, not because of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really just shit all over these damn tag teams. And it's not the case with the way they put them over in NXT. Like, they actually do a good job. But if you look at all of the tag teams that were NXT tag team champions that have gone up to the main roster, none of them have really been a success.
No.
I mean, you can argue Harper and Rowan, maybe, they moderately successful, but I don't think really, they were never champions. I mean, the Wyatt, quote-unquote, were the champions, but it was actually Bray and Randy Orton.
Right.
Wasn't really Harper and Rowan. So they never won belts, and they were mid-carders at best. American Alpha did win SmackDown Tag Team belts, but let's be honest, that was not a good championship reign. They were treated like fucking second-class citizens, and if you recall, when they were the champions during WrestleMania time, that was the only belt that was not defended at WrestleMania. And they basically treated them like they weren't even there. And then when they lost the belts, they couldn't wait to split them up and make Jason Jordan Kurt Angle's fake son.
Oh, man.
And
that
then
is a little ridiculous.
All the other champion NXT Tag Team Champions that came out of there, the Lucha Dragons. Sin Cara has never been anything. I mean, they did push Kalisto a little bit, let him win the U.S. title, but never really had a good successful run. And the team, the Lucha Dragons, never did anything.
No.
The Vaudevillains were a joke on the main roster.
Yes, they were.
Look what the fuck they've done to the Ascension. You know, they're the modern day conquistadors. And now they're even doing it to the Revival. I mean, I know they keep getting hurt. If it's not Wilder getting hurt, it's Dawson getting hurt. But they're not doing them any damn favors. I mean, you know, I know Main Event doesn't play on TV in the United States, but I watch it on Hulu. And for the last 3 weeks, they've had Dash Wilder losing to either, you know, and Scott Dawson is hurt, but they've had him losing to Rhino and Slater, and then Rhino again, and clean every week for 3 weeks in a row. It's like, this is not going to do any favors for the, well, top guys.
No.
You know, I know a lot of people in America don't even see Main Event, though. That's how they're able to make statements like when they did about my girl Emma not winning a match in like a year or something, when I was like, well, she just won a match on Main Event, but I guess it doesn't count because they don't play Main Event on TV.
Probably.
You know. But anyway, we will see what happens next week at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. But No Mercy last week kicked off with Elias. Now, no longer Elias Sampson, just Elias. Defeating Apollo Crews, another NXT guy who had so much potential and nothing. That was on the pre-show. And then we went to the main card. Miz defeated Kurt Angle's fake son, Jason Jordan, for the Intercontinental Championship. And if you saw that match, now they were in California there at what was the arena? The Staples Center in L.A. So, you know, the L.A. crowd, I guess, kind of, I don't want to say they're quite like the New York and Philly crowd or Chicago crowd, but I mean, those big city crowds usually are a little smarter than some of the smaller city crowds. No,
yes.
If you live in one of those small backwards-ass cities. But it is what it is. The bigger cities usually handle it better. But Miz is the true heel. I mean, we know Miz has been doing the best work of his career probably over the last year, year and a half. But he's a true heel in every sense of the word. Jason Jordan, they're trying to make him a clean-cut babyface, you know, making him the illegitimate son of an Olympic hero. He's challenging for the Intercontinental title. What were we going to say?
I just think that shtick is so funny. It's so ridiculous. It's asinine.
And nobody believes it. And so he's the clean-cut babyface, you know, very talented worker, in there against this true heel who talks so much shit and is cheating. He's got the Miz, Taraj, you know, Dallas and Curtis Axel out there cheating for him. And bam, when he hit the fucking his move, the what do you call it, the finale, whatever finale.
Yeah.
I lost my the name of the move. What the hell is the name of the move? The skull crushing finale. When he hit the skull crushing finale on Jason Jordan, that crowd popped like Austin was out there doing the fucking stunner on somebody. Like, and this is the heel now.
Yeah.
A true heel hitting his move on the babyface, and the crowd went nuts. That's how much they hate Jason Jordan, which is bad if he's supposed to be a babyface.
It is.
I mean, it was just insane. Like, the way they're booking some of these guys, you're like, what the fuck? You know, you see why the people react the way they react, though. Then Finn Balor defeated Bray Wyatt. He wasn't allowed to wear the demon makeup. It had to just be Finn this time. And then on to the tag team championship match, and Ambrose and Rollins retained the titles in a match that I thought was the best match of the show, where they defeated Cesaro and Sheamus. And I mean, Cesaro lost his two front teeth literally as he went mouth first into that damn post and, you know, continued the match and wrestled the whole fucking match. You know, and you know he was in pain. You saw his mouth was just bleeding like crazy. And that was such a good match, too. I mean, by far, that was the best match of the show. And that one spot where Sheamus hits White Noise on Dean Ambrose, and then Rollins tries to do a top rope hurricanrana on Cesaro, but he catches him and reverses it, and then power bombs him off the top rope on top of Ambrose. That was like a fantastic spot there. That looked so good. And somehow, Ambrose got up from that shit.
Yeah.
And they still are the Raw Tag Team Champions. That was a really good match, though. I really enjoyed that. Shame Cesaro lost his teeth, though. But
That's... Oof. Oh, man. That, That does suck.
You know, I think they sent him to some emergency...
They would have to.
Yeah, you got because they did that with Natalya, because they had knocked one of her teeth out.
Mm-hmm.
Had to get her, like, a dental implant or something. Now, the Women's Raw Championship was on the line in a Fatal 5-Way. Was originally booked as a Fatal 4-Way, then they put Bailey into the match, so the 4-way became a 5-way. But the goddess Alexa Bliss is still your Raw Women's Champion, as she pinned said Bailey to retain the title over Nia Jax, Sasha Banks, and my girl Emma. Now, there was a rumor that my girl Emma was going to be the one to take the pin, and Bailey was the one. And the first thing I thought, the reason why they did not let Emma take the pin, not because they're trying to push her, because they're assholes, and they're not going to push her. But the reason why she didn't take the pin is because they are saving her, because I bet you they are going to feed her to Asuka, because Asuka debuts at the next Raw brand pay-per-view, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And I bet her first opponent is going to be Emma, and that's why they didn't have her take the pin, so that Asuka can beat the shit out of her at the next pay-per-view.
You're probably right.
TLC, that's the next Raw brand pay-per-view. And Asuka makes her debut at that show. So we'll see what happens, but I'm willing to bet you that's what it was. Then from there, the big dog, Roman Reigns, somehow gets up from 4 attitude adjustments. And one Superman punch and spear later, he beats John Cena. Then John Cena goes on Raw Talk and tells you that he's 40 years old now and he's been performing at a main event level for the last 15 years and he doesn't know how much longer he can do this, and Roman Reigns is the man and all this shit. I mean, it's like the most ridiculous shit. I mean, we know that John Cena is leaving to film the Transformers spinoff movie, the Bumblebee movie.
Mm-hmm.
But he's trying to make it seem like Roman Reigns is now the guy. I mean, Roman Reigns has been saying he's the guy. But yeah, he's not.
No, he's not.
Not even close. But, I mean, in the 3 decades that I've been watching wrestling, I have never seen any shit like this in my life, where they just keep pushing a guy that is clearly rejected by the fans, and they keep pushing him, and keep pushing him. And, I mean, they've given him every damn thing. They've let him beat Cena now. They've let him beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. They let him win the Royal Rumble. They let him beat Triple H at WrestleMania. Everything. And now the plan is for him to beat Brock Lesnar at the upcoming WrestleMania.
I can't handle it.
I've never seen anything like this. I mean, in the past, when they've tried to push a guy and he doesn't catch one the way they had hoped, they move on.
Yeah.
We've seen that several times. Luger, you know, Ultimate Warrior, you can say, to a certain degree, Sid Vicious, all those guys. When it wasn't working, they moved on to the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
But for some strange reason, they can't let go of this whole Roman Reigns thing. They just keep on going and going and going. And if you would have seen, and you know, Cena can be a rather polarizing figure in his own right. But the people were clearly on Cena's side over Roman Reigns. Anybody's a babyface against Roman Reigns. You can put Satan in there against him, and they would cheer Satan.
Oh, hell yeah.
And Roman Reigns was, when he got the pin on Cena, if you would have seen how tight that damn camera shot was, they would not show that audience for anything to show how they were born. They showed like the same little pocket of fans that were cheering him over and over again. And then they just kept doing these really tight close-ups, because if they would have did a wide shot and you saw all those fans booing, it was going to be in contrast to the audio you were hearing, where they were clearly piping in cheers or something.
Oh, they always do.
It was just the most ridiculous thing. I don't know what kind of shit Afa or Sika or whoever have on McMahon that he is just pushing Roman Reigns for whatever reason. It's just, I don't get it.
I have no idea.
I don't know, maybe Afa like caught him like murdering somebody or something, and said, you know, you're gonna push
my kid.
Yeah. Until you know, he's the world champion or something. I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't understand either, but it's obviously not working.
That's not stopping them, though.
No, it's not.
He's being booked as this unbeatable guy, and the plan is right now for him to go into the next WrestleMania and beat Brock Lesnar for the Universal title. Enzo Amore was up next against Neville. New Cruiserweight Champion. What's up with that?
Oh, shit.
Somehow, Enzo Amore is the Cruiserweight Champion, wins over Neville, and they're turning him into a heel. And I don't get it. I mean, he sells a lot of merchandise. He's, you know, the fans eat up the whole soft thing, the SAWFT thing. And now they're trying to turn him into a heel. I mean, he clearly was very heelish in that match. I mean, he was getting his ass kicked for the whole match, but then to win the belt, he kicked Neville in the nuts and held his tights to win the match. Not a very babyface thing to do.
Not at all.
So now he's the champion. Then he comes out and insults the whole 205 Live roster the next night on Raw, and then they beat the shit out of him some more. So I guess that's his character now, just to get the shit beat out of him?
I guess, because they've been doing it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, because he's the guy with the big mouth, and then people always shut him up. But, you know, he is somehow getting some interest for 205 Live. And before there was
like
none.
No interest, yeah.
Right.
Hey, listen, as long as it gains interest and gets people watching so those guys have an audience, because, like, you know, it's not like they're doing it without getting hurt and crap like that.
True. And I guess now they have a bigger audience, somewhat. Still not huge by comparison. Which, to me, I always thought it was a mistake to do 205 Live in the first place. I questioned, like, why the fuck would they even think about doing this show? Because if you really think about it, in professional wrestling, in particular in the United States, and in particular in the WWE, the littler guys have never really been the big thing. WWE was always known as like the land of giants. This is where all the big monsters like Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and Andre the Giant and Big John Studd and all these fucking big ass guys were. And, you know, McMahon still seems to have a thing for the big guys. I mean, but in Japan, Mexico, you know, in some areas in Europe, you know, like in UK and even in some areas in Australia, there have been smaller guys that have gotten over on a larger scale than they have in the United States. But it just was never a thing. Except, I would say, and I criticize a lot of things that WCW did, but the cruiserweights were over in WCW.
Yes.
That's probably the only good thing they did, but one of the few. Goldberg, I think, was a good thing, in my opinion.
He was.
But lighter weight guys that were booked in a lower weight division in the WWE never got over. Ever.
No.
I mean, they could have smaller guys that were competing for the heavyweight belt, like when they had, you know, Ray or like Shawn Michaels or Eddie or one of those people competing for the main world heavyweight title. Even though they were smaller, they were booked, you know, in the heavyweight division. But whenever they did, whether it been the old junior heavyweight division or the light heavyweight division or the cruiserweight division, whatever the hell you want to call it, when it was the lighter weight guys, it never got over in WWE.
Mm-mm.
So I always question it. I mean, we know in some in the legit combat sports, you know, we talked about it before, how the smaller guys are really the main stars when
yes.
you look at MMA and boxing now. You know, the heavyweights are in MMA, they're almost never really relevant, really.
Nah, there's not, you don't really get anybody exciting in there. Like, you want
except
the smaller guys. Well, yeah. But still, it's like they didn't have a really great set of people for him to go up against.
Right. I mean, Cain Velasquez, he's probably, like, the best one, I guess, but he's not consistent either. I mean, none of them ever hold the belt long because they're so fucking big. You know, one guy hits him and knocks him out first fucking title defense.
Yeah, it's like it wasn't exciting.
Right. Right, and the smaller guys give you a lot more exciting, more technical, more balanced than what you get with the... I mean, sometimes if you just want to see two big brutes beating the shit out of each other...
Well, yeah, don't get me wrong. And you can definitely see that. There's nothing wrong with that. But, like, most of the time you don't want to see that crap.
And, I mean, you can look for the last 2 decades easily. The biggest attraction in boxing has been the lighter guys.
Mm-hmm.
The Floyd Mayweathers of the world and you know, Roy Jones and all those guys that were a lot smaller. You know, I think, and at one time, the heavyweights in boxing were like superstars. You know, you go back to the Ali era and Frazier and Spinks and Holmes and Mike Tyson and all that. They were like huge superstars. And then once... I would say after probably, what, Lennox Lewis maybe? Nobody cared?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say the last really exciting heavyweight match was probably Vitaly Klitschko versus Lennox Lewis.
And after that, it just went in the shitter. Like,
yeah. It's like no one, after that, it was just like no one put their heart into it. It's just, it was like, eh.
Yeah. I mean, and a heavyweight championship fight, which used to be one of the biggest.
It was the biggest.
Right, you could have in sports, period. I mean, probably, you know, rival the Super Bowl in terms of how big it was in terms of its importance. Now, they would never be able to draw a huge audience, at least with the current crop of champions that they have. And to do like what Mayweather was able to do with what amounted to a glorified exhibition against McGregor, where they charged $100 for a pay-per-view, the heavyweight champion wouldn't be able to do that.
Oh, hell no. There's no heavyweight champion around right now that would be able to do that. Now, you want to go back in time and maybe like Ali, Frazier, Foreman, like those guys in their prime. Yeah, I can see charging that for them in their prime, but those are like some of the only heavyweights ever that could probably garner that type of fee.
Well,
Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson, right.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike Tyson almost built pay-per-view by himself.
Yeah.
Huge attraction, you know, in the early days of pay-per-view there. But, you know, it never really got over in WWE. So I still question why they would give an entire weekly show to the Cruiserweights. Like, it just doesn't make sense. I would rather have an all-women show every week than to do a show with the Cruiserweights.
That would be a good swap out.
Yeah, I mean, better than what they're doing. And no disrespect to the guys. I think they worked their asses off, but nobody cares about
them. That is true.
And that's the problem there. So then the main event of No Mercy, you talk about two big bulls going in there. The Universal Championship was on the line, Brock Lesnar versus Braun Strowman, and Strowman is super over with the people, and a lot of people were not happy that Lesnar beat him, and beat him clean, too, with the F5. But the idea is keep Lesnar strong so that he can go into WrestleMania and lose to Roman Reigns.
That's so ridiculous. I like... Ugh.
So he beat him, and I'm sure the people would have had no problem with...
Oh, I wanted Braun... Yeah.
Brock Lesnar. That's what they preferred.
Absolutely.
It's not what they got. It was not a bad match, though. I mean, it was okay. Wasn't the best match of the card, though. You know, where that... I really think that tag team match was the best match of the card. But we'll see where we go from here. Obviously, as I said, Hell in a Cell coming up next week. Now, WWE 2K18 coming out in just a few weeks, a couple weeks, actually. And good news for you, PC version comes out the exact same day as the console version, for
whoop,
one.
Whoop.
Whereas, you know, the past several years, it didn't come out until, like, a few months after the game was already out.
But we get it at a severely discounted price compared to what you usually pick it up for or get it for.
Well, I did the deluxe edition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's paid for already. So when it comes out, all I got to do is pick it up. But, yeah, it was pretty pricey. Not as pricey as last year. I got the NXT Collector's Edition, which was $100. This year, a little cheaper. It was $90. But, you know, it gets all of the digital content, you know, the DLC and all that. None of the physical stuff. Because this year's Collector's Edition is the John Cena Enough Edition.
Which is ridiculous.
$150.
Yeah.
And I don't like Cena that much. Like I said, I respect him and all that, but I'm not paying $150 for John Cena shit.
Oh, hell no.
You know. So... the collector's edition was fine for me. But the cool thing about that is we do get the game 4 days early. So where the official release date is the 17th, we get it on October 13th. The DLC has been released. And I tell you, I guess probably 8 of the 10 people that they're putting on the main DLC, I probably guessed correct. Two,
nice.
I was very surprised about, though. I was extremely surprised. And,
is this a good surprise or a bad surprise?
It's an okay surprise. Like,
oh, okay.
It was just, I didn't expect, one, I didn't expect at all, and the other one, I was just kind of, that's kind of...
interesting.
Weird. Yeah. You know, along with the accelerator and the new moves pack and the Kickstarter and all the things that they normally do. And in addition to the pre-order bonus, which is Kurt Angle, and then of course you get the additional collector's edition and deluxe edition downloadables of the alternate John Cena characters, RVD and Batista. So in addition to them, you also have these DLC packs. Where, and you knew they had to hold these guys because they want to sell the DLC, so you needed star power to sell the DLC. So in the Enduring Icons pack, it is headlined by Matt and Jeff, the Hardy Boys, of course.
Uh-huh.
You want to sell the fucking DLC, you put the Hardy Boys in it, you're going to sell some DLC. The long-awaited return of the Hardy Boys, I might add, to a WWE game. It's been almost... 10 years, I would say, since they were last in a WWE game. Mm. And then Hall of Famers, Beth Phoenix, and my boys, finally, the Rock and Roll Express.
Yay!
Making their WWE video game debut.
There you go.
And I pretty much guessed that. I pretty much figured that since Beth Phoenix and the Rock and Roll Express were inducted into the Hall of Fame, if they held true to what they had been doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we had discussed it, how DDP and Rick Rude and what's his face? Who was the other guy?
Razor? No.
That was from 2017.
Oh.
I can't remember. Oh, Kurt Angle. Yeah. Kurt Angle, DDP, and Rick Rude were already in the game. So as far as wrestlers, Beth Phoenix and the Rock and Roll Express were the only ones that were in this year's Hall of Fame class that weren't in the game. So I'm like, you got to put both of them in the game. And sure enough, they did. So that's cool. This is where the surprise comes. Now, for the NXT pack, I figured you were going to get the returning Drew McIntyre.
Mm-hmm.
I figured you were going to get Aleister Black because, you know, Aleister Black is awesome. To me, that's a guy that I would be pushing to try and make him, like, the main guy. Like, I think he's really good. I don't know if he can talk that well, but neither can Roman Reigns, so.
Yeah.
You know. Elias Sampson, he was one of the ones where I was pretty sure he was going to get in. But then the other two, Lars Sullivan, I did not expect at all.
Mm.
Not that it's a bad thing, but it was just like he's only been on NXT like a couple of months or something. I didn't think they were going to even put him in the game. Like, so I was very surprised. And then adding Ruby Riott, I was surprised that they put her in the game as well, because I was thinking if they're going to put another NXT female, and they did put quite a few NXT females in the game this year. Most, you know, most of them are actually in the regular game without being DLC. But I thought, you know, conspicuous by her absence was Liv Morgan. And Liv Morgan is pretty popular when it comes to the gaming community. If you deal with some of the community creation, she's one of the most created characters. So I thought Liv Morgan would have been the one that they put in the DLC, but no, it's Ruby Riott. So I was like shocked. And Liv Morgan officially is not in the game again. So I guess the community creators are going to have to go to work once again and create. They created a hell of a Liv Morgan, though. I don't know if you ever download some of these community creations.
No, I haven't.
They do a fucking great job. They really do.
I really should, because, like, I used to go and do that with, like, the Nintendo Miis on Nintendo. Like, they would have this, like, rating system where you could see, like, the community's, like, creation of a certain type. Like, it might be, like, Spider-Man or, you know, something like that. And if it, you know, you could vote on it and things like that. So I should look at them because, you know, they are pretty cool. And what some people can do is absolutely amazing.
Oh,
and like screwing around, making your own character in that game, you can make a lot of stuff in that game.
You really can. And sometimes, you know, I make my original characters and do my thing, but when it comes to making people that are like real wrestlers that really exist, I'm not the best one usually. I mean, I can make it kind of look like them, you know, but they fucking did an amazing job. I don't even know who made the character, but it was downloaded a lot. I even downloaded their Liv Morgan last year. And if you would have put their character that they created and put a picture of Liv Morgan next to it, like, it looked just like her. I couldn't believe how accurate they were with everything. And now I know you can actually map their face on there, and I think that's what they did, and how her face looked so accurate. But I mean, they did such an amazing job with it. I was just like, damn, these people, like, there's really some talented people out there,
right?
You know. And they did a great Jushin Thunder Liger last year too that I downloaded. I don't know who made that either. But if I see, like, a really good character that they created, I download them. I'm like, fuck that shit, you know?
I mean, I've done it with other things, so I imagine I should just take a look. I mean, I'm not opposed to downloading cool things that people have made.
Oh yeah, if they make some good shit, I do download. Now I usually will alter it a little bit and make it my own thing, because sometimes when they create characters, they max out all of their attributes and all that, so I'll like bring them down and make them more realistic, because I don't want somebody to be so super powerful over everybody else, you know. But if it's got the physical look of the person and it's really good, I will take advantage of that. I mean, that's one thing I really do like, is the community creation. But I'm pretty pleased with the DLC here. Not bad. And overall, if you count the DLC and all of the characters that are going to be actually on the physical disc, this roster is absolutely huge. Biggest of all time. I mean, it is, in terms of unique playable characters, 184.
That's craziness.
And this is not counting the alternate versions of the same person. If you count them, there's 213. But if you're counting just unique individuals, 184. So that's awesome. Plus, I think you still got 200 creator wrestler slots, or that you can download community creations or whatever. So you can have a huge fucking roster. Like, this is like the ultimate wrestling game that we've always imagined, you know. So it should be great. Can't wait. Couple of weeks. It's going to be some good shit there. I can't wait to play with my boys, though, first time.
It's a dream come true for you.
It really is. And speaking of all those 205 Live guys, a lot of them are on the game. I mean, they really have done a lot of music. They've got quite a few of the 205 Live guys on there. Everybody's represented pretty good.
Well, that's good. That's what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Even the legends, you know, they're always pretty good with the legends. But they added some new legends to Rick Martel's on there this year as the model.
Mm.
This is his first time on there. Some cool stuff, though. Can't wait, though. WWE 2K18, pick it up. I'm sure we'll be talking about it again.
Oh, we will be. I'm sure we will.
And I know, like, some of the people, when they get the PC version, they do mods and stuff. Like,
yeah.
They do some really creative shit there, too. If you ever see some of the videos that these people have done on YouTube, it's, like, amazing. I'm like, how the fuck did they do that in the game? But then I realized they modded the PC version.
Oh, yes. Modding is a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So you, and now that the PC version is coming out the exact same day as the console version, you're going to have that shit hitting, like, the web, like, immediately. So there's going to be all kinds of really cool WWE 2K18 content. See,
oh,
I need to get more creative with my content that I put out there.
Maybe you do.
Now, all I do is just stream some of my pay-per-views and stuff like that. I need to get more creative, like, and actually put some intricate storylines and stuff like I used to. I mean, back when it was hard to do, I used to do really good storylines. But now that it's really easy to stream content, upload it, and edit it, and I mean, they give you all the tools now. And you don't even have to work hard for it. Whereas back in the day, I had to really pull it off and then put it on a videotape because there was nothing else back then.
Yeah.
And it was very hard to do all that shit. And I would take the time to do it back then. Now, I just, you know, and I got all the fucking tools in front of me, and I'll do is stream a pay-per-view or something.
You need to get your stuff together.
I do. Get my game up. But, so that's it for us this week. Did want to mention, too, how Hollywood was complaining because box office receipts were down. And guess who they blamed?
Oh, hit me with it. Who'd they blame?
Rotten Tomatoes.
What?
Of all things. Like, not blaming themselves because they were making crappy fucking movies that nobody wanted to see. But they blamed Rotten Tomatoes for making the ratings so easily available that the people knew the movies were bad, and this made the people not go.
Oh, okay.
So it's not that they made a crappy movie. I mean,
no, it's never them. How could you even think that? How dare you?
It's your fault that you told them it was a crappy movie.
Yes.
You know, and it was just like, what? Like, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. Like, maybe make good fucking movies. Like, the good movies made money. You know? I mean, look at Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman was a good movie. Made money. It's now the fifth biggest superhero movie of all time.
But they don't want to make good movies. They're out of ideas.
Right. I mean, Transformers was not a good movie, and I'm glad it stunk up the joint.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe John Cena can help with this Bumblebee.
I hope not. I hate to be like that, but I hope not.
I like Bumblebee, though.
I do, too. I like Bumblebee a lot, but, I mean, I don't know. I don't like the Michael Bay Transformers.
No, well, he's done.
No, I know.
Yeah, thank goodness. He kind of overstayed his welcome, though.
Oh, yes, he did.
But we'll see how that does. But that just, when I read that, I was just like, you got to be kidding me. It's their fault because they told people your movie sucked?
Yeah.
You know. Now, that's some crazy shit. That's like,
listen, any excuse to not blame themselves.
Right. It's just terrible, terrible, terrible. But that's it for us this week. Next week, the pay-per-view, WWE Hell in a Cell, Shane O'Mac and Kevin Owens in the cell. Wonder, is Shane going to jump off the top of the cell or do some crazy shit again? I wonder.
Stunts.
We'll find out. But till then, remember, log on to TonyLaneShow.com, blogtalkradio.com/TonyLaneShow, and of course, subscribe to the show in iTunes and on Google Play. So for Maris, I am Tony Lane, and we will see you next week.
Call the Tony Lane Show.
Wrong one.
Think out loud. The Tony Lane Show.
What kind of world are we living in that this is considered entertainment?
TonyLaneShow.com.